Blog Talk Radio.
Lying dead as a beggar with an outstretched hand, I find myself in a western land asking for bread from dishonest men. I do not fear the lion's den. You'll be brought up to your father's land, and my cries alone will tell the nation man to return to his promised land, going home again out of his lion's den.
Yes, blessed souls, it's time to leave the land where we are and head back to our promised Father's land for all peoples, as the prophecies have prophesied. Blessings and greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive because we merit this very most existential of mundane yet eternal moments to be connected to Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. Now turn to Blog Talk Radio. We humbly assert you're tuned down into the higher frequency of Blog Talk Radio. We call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class 665, Conversations from the Tree of Life, Part 3. Blesses our Creator, Baruch Hashem, Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience. That's 7 billion people going strong. Creator's help, we're now broadcasting live from 1031, live from Jamaica, that diamond in the Caribbean, corresponding to 1131, live from Turtle Island, equals the USA, equals AKA Unified Soul Actualization, and more specifically from Kesser Chronites, Pisgah Kesser, Crown Heights, Brooklyn, New York. Program content will focus on being a discussion with Sila Media prolific lecturer Jerome Sage Butler within his spiritual, cognitive, emotional realm coined under the Tree of Life. Butler is driven to tap into his deep ancestral wellsprings of divine source, correlating, relating, and developing dialogue with other human souls intended to guide human dialogue towards analyzing the moral and ethical nature we as human beings are well advised to explore. Program content will focus on deliberating further on Israeli clinical research finding means of practically implementing marijuana within treatment modalities for various health issues currently found within the Holy Land, Israel. This is no news to the Rastafarian culture, and Butler will elucidate further on this issue. As well, discussion will enter into concerning the further developing of the human-earth connection and the negative implications of human-earth disconnect. Finally, prophecy, sweet prophecy teachings in your local international cyberspace. Torah activist Don Zussi Goodman, that's me, will verbally spark off Jerome Sage Butler based on a prophecy. And the prophecy is in the book of Isaiah, who, by the way, in our Israelite tradition, is called the Navi Agula, the prophet of redemption, where it says, quote, unquote, "Be silent to me, you islands, and kingdoms shall renew their strength. They shall approach and they shall speak together to judgment. Let us draw near." Our call in number, if you want to try to connect in the last 10 minutes of today's program, if you want to ask any questions of Jerome Sage Butler or myself, is 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, may the eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. Peace and bless. Peacefully and pleasantly. And now I welcome my wonderful African Taino Jamaican brother Jerome Sage Butler, straight out of the Lion's Den. Good morning, sir.
Blessings and morning, brother Don, and blessings to all who's listening across 35 nationalities and even more into the cosmic. You know, we give thanks from the Blue Mountains in Jamaica, my home. You know, I give thanks to be a channel, you know, even a medium for divine source, the Christ incarnate in behavior and attitude, in formulation. We give thanks, you know, for Rastafari, Haile Selassie, his presence, his culture, his essence, you know, his words, his philosophies, his ways of life. I give thanks to nature, you know, and the nature of human souls towards, you know, transformation. It is a continuous process, and it's a good feeling to be a part of the process.
Amen, I say.
Blessings once again.
So, Jones, I just want to go quickly right into the first portion of our discussion. Now, this past August, in a Medical Center called the Hadassah University Medical Center in Israel, the Pediatric Hematology Hemato-Oncology Department in the last past month has had a crisis, and what was coming out of this was that there was an 11th annual Israel Medical Conference held at the Jerusalem International Convention Center, was dedicated to the utilitarian usage of marijuana, the ganja, the herb, with the rest of time divided among inequality in medical care between the center and the periphery, new medical technologies and Israeli clinical trials. Now, the truth of the matter is this free event was sponsored by three hospitals. I want to give them credit. Hadassah, which has a Jerusalem competitor, the Shaare Tzedek Medical Center, and Haifa's, which is a coastal city, B'nai Zion Medical Center. And there's a lot of organizations and companies involved. And there were 1,400 people that were gathered. And one of the things that was discussed was that the health minister, who was opposed to the principle of the exportation of marijuana because it's a drug like no other. Make no mistake about it. It should not be taken by people who are not patients and not by all patients. But the government approved the move, he said, and he would demand that some of the profits go to the health system. So basically what's going on here is that there is a lot of ambivalence in the country, Jerome Sage, despite the fact that clinical research is in fact gone so far in Israel. In fact, they've been studying it for 40-plus years, and one of the stars of this gathering was a professor, Rafael Mechulam, who has gone head-to-head, toe-to-toe with the Israeli government because he started his study of cannabis more than 40 years ago, and he said no one was interested at that time. But recently, Nature Neuroscience put the subject on its cover. There's a huge interest in the medical and social aspects of it, and it's involved from his clinical trials that modulating endocannabinoid activity may have therapeutic potential in almost all diseases affecting humans, from obesity, metabolic syndrome, diabetes, and complications to neurodegenerative, inflammatory, cardiovascular, gastroenterological, dermatological, psychiatric, and oncological, which is cancer, disease, and pain. So, Joan Sage, just, you know, your comment, first of all, I'd like from a Jamaican perspective, has there been that ambivalence, because I understand it was legalized in Jamaica within recent times, but Israel, despite the fact they've been showing that there is clinical reason to legalize it for medical, and then there's also now it's been decriminalized, and basically people will not get put on charges until they're arrested a fourth time on the substance. But to me, more importantly, okay, when I see here that this professor, who's been studying this for 40 years, says schizophrenic patients can benefit from CBD, but not from THC. But in other places, they'll show where the THC does have a benefit. So my question to you is, can you talk about the history of ambivalence? I'm sure that it exists in Jamaica and where Jamaica is right now, based on basically what, social experience, or was there clinical studies done over there as well?
Blessings, and thank you, Brother Dan. Listening very intently to your argument, your mood, and your point. There has been, I would say, dramatic changes in the governmental view of marijuana in Jamaica. And the first thing I need to point out is that it is not legal. It is decriminalized, and that means that it is somewhat legal to carry a small portion of marijuana, and there are adjuncts to that where Rastafarians are allowed to cultivate a small amount of marijuana for their own personal, well, certainly large in comparison to the average individual. The average individual is allowed to cultivate like 5 plants, and that is for personal use. So it's a decriminalization, but if you are still caught with a certain amount, you can be prosecuted or even fined for it. If you are caught with amounts that can be considered for commercial in any large scale, well, trafficking, well, that's still a crime. As one member in Parliament says, we should not mislead people in how we relate to marijuana because we cannot take it through our ports of exit and entry, end quote. So the point is, marijuana is very divergent. Cannabis sativa, however we relate to it. In Jamaica, of late, the government has had this movement that decriminalization not only sparked it, but it was as a result of this movement that we had decriminalization. There was the Ganja Commission, and it probably went through its work for about 25 years. So there have been lots of research, and they had professors, they had doctors, and also members of the government, and that's how they came up with writing the green papers and the policies based upon what we now call Medicanja, right? And that is medical ganja, as we call it in Jamaica, or medical marijuana. So now Jamaica has sought through the university to create a new strain of marijuana, right? And that is geared towards the Medicanja, the medical marijuana use. And it is very unique in that, it's an endorsement of university, it's on the government, of the potentialities in marijuana. I couldn't speak much about marijuana without going to Rasta, because I think in Jamaica, certainly in popular culture, the last time we spoke about briefly how it is that marijuana was introduced to Africans who had just been out of slavery through emancipation and were somewhat in this apprenticeship period where there was a lot of foreboding and frustration. And at that time, the Crown Colony government in Jamaica, they went for indentured Indian workers as well as Chinese workers, right? But the Indians in particular brought their Hindu culture, and in the Hindu culture was cannabis sativa as offerings up to Shiva and the goddess Kali. Hence the name for one of our favorite strains of marijuana in Jamaica. I would say the original strain that we talk about in Jamaica, that we call Kali. And they say the seeds were brought over by these indentured Indian workers, and they cultivated it in Jamaica and they smoked it. So as the Africans who were in a woeful state of dismay, seeking some form of motivation toward self-actualization under the conditions of prejudice, and I would say slavery still continued in America up until the 1880s in some parts. So slavery was still there. We need a way to release from the actual circumstances that pervaded. As we got closer to the Indians, because there were obviously that unity or a closer unity in class than there would have been with the slave masters or the slave owners, right? The former slave owners or the plantocracy now. So the marijuana culture from the Hindus transferred into the Africans, and the Africans began to apply it to their cultures. Not that it wasn't in African cultures, but it wasn't predominantly here before that. So it is a marked part of Jamaican history, and the anthropologists not only suggest but almost fix it that this is how marijuana was introduced to the Africans here in Jamaica. So they got it into their psychological processes, and then marijuana became like an integral part of that holistic Jamaican lifestyle where your sense of well-being got, I would say, magnified. It got resonant, and you got a chance to discuss, to break out, as Bob Marley said, out of the stigma, your soul longs to be free. Communication, revolution, evolution rather, a sense of return, a sense of beginning, new beginnings.
It
petered into philosophies, and then eventually Rastafari was born in the 30s, And the herb became a fixed part of Rastafari sacrament. So it became a part of the religious and spiritual and just a functional way of life. How we applied it to our lives, mainly then it was smoked. And over the time, it developed into edibles as well too, right? So it was cooked. Teas were always popular. So it was always, because one of the cultures we got from the Hindus was to make teas, right? And to make drinks from it. So it became integral in that we used the stems, the stalks. You know, we pressed them and we made mats and we did dynamic things. We made art, you know. We did things with the marijuana that proved our moniker that we used to represent herbs in Jamaica. And we say herbs is the healing of the nation, meaning cannabis sativa is the healing of the nation. So long before any medical or governmental approaches or even the approach through universities, and we do give thanks for the evolution of their thoughts, right? But Rastafari, through religious perception, spiritual, and just the self-perception, already declared cannabis sativa the healing of the nation. Now, as governments began to examine it, as there began to be more medical and biochemical analysis, then came this word, THC, and God knows all the other derivatives. And I don't know all the other derivatives. I'm not an expert, so I will not attempt to relate on that level. But what I'll say about it is this. THC popped up and a lot of other cannabinoids began to pop up. And then we began to realize that there's not just this notion of these harmful chemicals. Because we were told that if you should have it like in a drink or an edible, maybe you have maybe anywhere from 35 to 400 active different chemicals, biochemicals, ingested, right? And then we were told that if you should smoke it, begins to become somewhere near 4,000, anyway from 400 to 4,000, possible. I'm not the expert. These are suggestions I've read from so-called experts, right? And I'm taking it because it's a language that I've gleaned from them, right? In how we interpret it, we say weak minds should not smoke. So as I heard you say that in its application to epileptic treatments and to the epileptic patients and also to people who have other neuro disorders, and also that certain people who have a schizophrenic disorder should stay away from THC-heavy intake, right? The thing is that in Jamaica, we would say if you are unstable that way mentally and you ingest the marijuana, whether through the smoking of it or the eating of it, and your mental and emotional state becomes too unbalanced, then we say your head is light. Head light or lighted people means you should not, or you should watch the amount, the measure of cannabis that you ingest into your system. Take it almost in sense of a medical directive as how to take medication. So I would suggest, right, that if a doctor through the pharmacist prescribed a certain number of pills for a particular illness, I'm almost always thinking that prescription does not say pop all the pills into your mouth anytime you feel like. I'll pop three today, five tomorrow, ten the next day. There are strict guidelines as how to apply the measure of these biotoxins, these biochemicals, into your bloodstream, into your system. So, marijuana, over the years, have proven itself very clear. They are very lucidated individuals who marijuana has been a functional part of their literacy, of how they are pragmatic or they are artistic. Their ingenuity comes through the application of marijuana, giving them this sense of calmity so they can apply themselves to focus intent. And I'm not just talking on the scale of artistic aesthetics. I'm talking in terms of specified methodology for people who are studying these intricate sciences, both on the social and even these medical sciences. I'm not going to call anyone's name, but I know doctors who smoke. Peter Tutt said it. You know, doctors who smoke, lawyers who smoke. So smoking, though being a stigma, the ingestion of marijuana seems to be more than just a cultural thing. It seems to be a human thing. And there are social smokers who smoke for a sense of buzz, a sense of excitement in the moment. And there are smokers who smoke because they want to escape, right? They want to escape the realities around, right?
Right.
And then there are smokers who smoke for the deeply meditative. Now there is medical marijuana. And now in the United States, where you are, in certain states, right, there is certain personal permits an individual can get to grow it, right? And there's certain permits an individual can get from their medical doctor to allow them to smoke marijuana, medical marijuana, which the biochemists are saying to us are free of the THC, which, as I said, has become this poster child of what is negative in the marijuana, of which we do not know here in Jamaica what that is. But whatever that is,
right,
they've got THC-free herb to prescribe as medical marijuana. And already there are amazing testimonies in terms of the systematic acceptance, right? Because Rasta already said herbs, meaning ganja, marijuana, is the healing of the nation. So I'm happy to see that there are now these governmental applications, even through the universities, the research councils, that is now looking at the myriad applications. In Jamaica, there's been a drug on the shelf for maybe 30 years. That's called Canafal. And Canafal is it's eye drops, you know. It's an ophthalmologist mm-hmm. drug, right? So it's made from cannabis. So, you know, they have recognized so many uses. So there are endless possibilities, and I welcome. I'm not necessarily on the systematic side, but I understand how it is that life evolves. And I see that something is wholesome and holistic. People would also want to make it so-called functional and practical and applicable to myriad, you know, of modalities. So I'm happy to see that there's good research, and I know for a fact that it helps a lot of individuals to calm their states of mind and to regenerate electro pathways, electromagnetic pathways within the body, to be able to even move, you know. And they are so docile without a spliff and as soon as they smoke and get the marijuana into the system, you can see like an unto a lotus, you know, they open up and the beauty that they are begin to come out, you know. So I say more research for more functional applications in society. I say go forward.
Okay. Thank you, I'd like to contrast that with two other forms of drugs which are currently legal in the United States of America, and I'm assuming they're also, well, I know one is called the cigarette. And I read some facts about it and how this so overwhelmingly, just from this brief description about the, it's not even a paragraph of facts that I want to share with our listening audience. And by the way, I want to thank you as well. We now have people listening in the Bahamas aside from Jamaica since you came on the program. So I thank you for adding on to our international listenership over in the Caribbean. And as well, I want to quote the side effects off of a medical website called MedicineNet.com off a legal psychiatric drug, and again, it sounds much worse, even with the clinical studies. So we'll first start with the cigarette, and then one more thing. I want to bring out some studies in Israel about post-traumatic stress syndrome, and it applies not just in Israel, but also here in the United States, and I'm sure there's some people with post-traumatic stress syndrome in the islands as well. First, about the cigarette. What's in a cigarette? I want to mention as well, Drum Station, those of you listening out there, that I am involved in counseling people in a program that I work at, working with severely mentally ill individuals, to try, because a lot of people with mental illness who are trying to find their center so they can deal with their irregularities, all of us have our irregularities, but they kind of cycle into too much to the right side, being a little bit too high, figuratively speaking. And sometimes they're too depressed. So they reach for cigarettes. Now, according to the American Lung Association research in 2016, you have roughly 600 ingredients in cigarettes. But when the cigarette is burned, it creates over 7,000 chemicals, and 69 are carcinogenic. Here's some of them. I'm going to read a list of six carcinogenic materials that are found in a simple cigarette that a person can smoke freely. I mean, in a lot of places in America now, you have to smoke outdoors. You can't smoke indoors. I remember the day when I used to visit my doctor as a child, and he'd have a cigarette in one hand and a stethoscope in the other hand. Anyway, so here's the first thing. Yeah, well, hey, you know. And forget about the – and we were not even going to talk about the secondhand smoke. Where there, by the way, there is no safe amount of secondhand smoke tobacco-wise. Okay, so bless those listening out there. Here are six chemicals that are found in every cigarette if you're buying something bought in the USA. Acetone, which is found in nail polish remover. Ammonia, a household cleaner. Arsenic, used in rat poison. Butane, used in lighter fluid. Cadmium, which is battery acid, and toluene, which is used to manufacture paint. I mean, Jerome Sage, I never heard of those stuffs being in the marijuana. But here is in a simple, socially acceptable form of intoxicating oneself for the moment. And, you know, that's scary. Now, the second drug, which is a type of antidepressant, I'm just going to call it L. For those of you in the psychiatric field, you might know what I'm talking about. This medically approved, FDA-studied, Federal Drug Administration approved drug is approved for the treatment of depression and generalized anxiety disorders. Now, also, this drug is in the category of something called SSRI, which are used for treating obsessive-compulsive behavior disorders and panic disorders. And one of the things that I deal with a lot of people who have panic attacks, and they do reach for this, and there's other medications as well. But it says Lexapro is not, even though it's in that category, it's not approved. Oh, I said the drug. Okay. I let the cat out of the cat let the mouse out of the cat got out of the bag, but okay, we won't say it again. We'll just call it L. It's okay, because this is a medical site, and we're just quoting medical data. So there's side effects warning for this medication to help people with depression and generalized anxiety disorder. Dizziness, tingling, tiredness, vivid dreams, irritability, or poor mood. But then it becomes a little bit of insidious, blessed souls, because in order to avoid those symptoms, this medication has to be slowly reduced, not abruptly stopped, because Jerome Sage mentioned something very, very important. I've been dealing with psychiatrists for almost 20 years now in my field, and everything has to be titrated up or down very gradually, because it can cause brain damage to the recipient of these types of powerful medications. Now, this is where it gets a little scary. This very medication, which is being used legally to deal with the treatment of depression, has also been involved in increasing the risk of suicidal thinking and behavior suicidality, meaning basically they might start to cut their wrist or something or put a noose around their neck. In short-term studies with children, adolescents with depression. That's very scary stuff. Not only that, that as well, there can be for an adult, decreased sexual ability, desire, ejaculatory delay, which is very, very, it's very, very painful to the person, for a man who cannot perform his duties if he's in a, hopefully, a healthy relationship. And not only that, it can actually trigger influenza-like symptoms and pain in necks and shoulders. Now, I never really... Also abnormal bleeding, manic episodes, and problems related to the very thing that Peter Tosh once sang about, that the ganja, the marijuana will help with glaucoma, that this can give a side effect to cause a problem related to the disease of glaucoma. So your take on this, how these societal normalized medications or drugs, whatever you want to call them, in America, and I'm sure they're, cigarette smoking is legal in Jamaica, right? How so much money, Big Pharma, as we call it in America, Big Pharma, has been so much involved with these medications that actually, while they're making a profit, it's actually it's causing a lot of people to decompensate who don't have to decompensate when there are more, there are other means of dealing with their depression. What's your take on these matters?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Brother Dan. Listening intently to your different points and the different arguments. First thing I wanted to say, as you talked about the different, you list six of the active chemicals within cigarettes, and you mentioned that there are 7,000 active when it becomes when you begin to smoke, and you made an inference that such chemicals wouldn't be in the marijuana. Well, I'm not a chemist, but what I would suggest is that what I understand from based on elemental natures, right, is that things are correlated, right? So a product or an idea, right? Let's call it a conjuring. Let's call it a commanding of an idea, of a frequency into something. Now, what you conjure carries a certain value, right? A certain energy. So when you put a cigarette next to a spliff, you realize one thing. One is more controlled. The idea of it is to suggest something that it doesn't truly deliver, which is to suggest a lasting sense of peace. Now, in order for it to have that lasting sense of peace, the configuration of its chemical makeup in the specified nature in which it is created is the true essence. Herbs, marijuana, chemical makeup might be vast. It might be so much, depending on how it is grown, but it has a harmonization of its chemical matrices. It does. So that I would not suggest that there might not be a little arsenic, a little that in the marijuana. But to what level is it? And how is it created? How would you get that base chemical out of all the other chemicals? At what point would you get it to be that base? But when you create a product, you conjure a product for a specific intent, you know the chemical makeup you want in that. So I think there's an intent in cigarettes. I don't want the cigarette companies to come after me. I think there's an intent in cigarettes. And I think the essence in herbs, in marijuana, is a differentiating factor. Now, these heavy chemicals that are in these psychotropic drugs are geared at one thing, Brother Dan, to control, or rather, to inhibit behavior. And what are behavior? Behaviors to humans are accepted patterns of humans' expression. Persona is illusory, almost demonic at times. Who wants to hold on to the persona as examples of truly who we are? So why are we criminalizing certain behaviors? Next thing is, so these psychotropics are meant to control, make the individual docile, and basically to cut functionality. That is unhealthy. That's not wholesome. That's not natural. And certainly, it ain't godly. Marijuana as a psychotropic truly calms the nervous system. However it enters into your biology, however your psychology applies it to the biology, it all gets harmonized. And when you smoke, your breathing patterns becomes harmonized. Now, there are some people who say that it puts your circadian rhythms out. It also puts out some of the biometrics in terms of appetite. But however, we know it isn't that it puts them out. However, it harmonizes them to the psyche of the individual. Because let's be frank, if someone is quite natural, well-adjusted, and smokes or ingests marijuana in a temperate manner, then they'll have a very wholesome and very practical experience. Left brain balancing with the right brain. They will be able to be practical and yet pragmatic.
Right.
So there is a psychotropic element to the marijuana, which helps humans to regulate behavior. Likening to the elemental nature, sometimes you have a little too much water in your system. You need to blow off a little steam. You understand me? Sometimes you have a little too much fire in your system. You all need to cool down. So the marijuana gives the mental, the psychic patterns, that ability to regulate the biological pattern. I ain't the great scientist here, I ain't the great philosopher, but I think it comes together to how the breathing enacts the electromagnetic system through the parasympathetic, the parasympathetic, and the sympathetic nervous system running through your spine, all through how the blood pressure, the 16 pints of air pressure that's in the body, how when you breathe it is harmonized, how you sit in a certain position, you get greater value, more oxygen through the pneumatic system, through the brain, so your biorhythms are more harmonized. How it all comes together? God knows. Isu knows. He made it. I'm just observing it through the behaviors of those I've seen around me, those who have transferred aberrant behaviors into wholesome behaviors. And the next thing too, Brother Dan, when you talk about the side effects of those psychotropics, in my observation, just hearing you speak, seeing in my psyche almost an astral projection of such an individual who would be on such a drug, I'm seeing that the side effects are causing psychic aberrations and psychic abrasions, right? So such things are actually degenerating the cellular matter, especially in the brain. And remember, the brain is run through a very intricate bioelectric rhythm. And those things, from your ear is going to stand and end, from you've got a problem with your bowels, that is all bioelectric. So that stuff's messing up your natural rhythms. That ain't healthy. That ain't healthy. I ain't no doctor. Mm-hmm. And I ain't paid for no product, for no project or for no product, but I know that ain't healthy. Certainly not for someone who, according to the opinions of others, are having aberrated behaviors. And we are humans investing in controlling all human behaviors, when sometimes the behaviors are created by the configuration of the human consciousness, especially the ones that is pushed upon us all the time, these scientific mental patterns trying to program people into organic machines. Like 100 million of us can all act the same way. Tell us to jump and we jump. What if 100,000 out of that 100 million decide not only to jump but to bob and weave and spin and dip? Dip, I dip, we dip, we dip, you dip. I don't want to be on that trip. I want to flow, my own flow.
Well, the great sage of Israel, Rambam, says when people just copy the other people's behavior, they're like, you know, like the animals on the farm. So I just want a couple things here. I did not mean to infer that there was a comparative, there was some sort of comparable amount of carcinogens in the marijuana. I was just amazed that so many are legally allowed to exist in a cigarette as a legal product. The second thing is, in terms of the psychotropic medications, as in my experience, is that in my field, the language you use is, it's not so much in some people, and unfortunately, you know, straight in America, it's not really legal anymore to straitjacket a person. As you can watch, I mean, I once heard a PhD in, I once heard a PhD in psychology, Dr. Thomas Pomerantz from St. Louis, talk about he was involved in they had like timeout rooms in the 1960s in psychiatric wards, where basically he regrets, and you know, he's kind of like, he repented publicly for this, that he designed a room that was painted red. Because when the person is having a manic attack or some sort of psychiatric going beyond the bell curve of proper social interaction, they would be put into that room and they would literally bounce off the walls and bleed. But because the walls were painted red, it wouldn't be as noticeable, the blood on the side of the walls. So psychiatric medication is basically my field. We talk about it calms people's features down, meaning it doesn't. I never heard from a psychiatrist that a psychotropic drug heals a person. It's only to, you know, like a person has a ingrown toenail, so they shear it off, and maybe they put some salve on it afterwards. So This is the problem, and unfortunately, the great pain is in controlling people's features. Like, for instance, for people with bipolar, the famous medication in America, I'm assuming it's around the world, is called lithium, but it leads to kidney dysfunction, and a high percentage of people become diabetics. And this is where the problem comes. Now, I have a friend who's a rabbi, neuropsychologist, Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstock. He lives in Jerusalem. He told me once that there was a study done in America on the East Coast. I think it was in North Carolina, where they took a group of people with mental health issues, and they had them live on like a beachfront house, a bungalow, I guess you call it, right? And by the end of the summer, their features were calmed down, and they weren't bombed out on all the medications. The problem is the neighbors didn't want a home for these people, this population, to be put in, because they felt, quote-unquote, it would reduce the value of their home. So we see there's a lot of mistaken, distorted human consciousness. First of all, the stigmatizing of people with mental illness. Number two, the reluctance of, quote-unquote, we normals, which I'll put you and I in, whatever that's supposed to mean, is that, and I'm just saying in our category, we don't know how to react with a person who doesn't necessarily toe the line, but is not going to take an axe and start chopping people in pieces like is portrayed in the movies. If they got a little more human love, a little more human compassion, the ability to bond with people's relationships that they hopefully will get out of their shell of their fears and their paranoias and their manic episodes. I've seen in my own work, Jerome Sage, people can reduce their medications if they involve themselves in the activities they have a passion for, the things that make them want to live, that cause them to socialize with other people. So before a person smokes a cigarette, takes some ganja, they've got to be. Human beings are meant to be social beings, being human. So, you know, you have a social being that smokes a pack a day, a person who smokes some amount of ganja every day, but they're social beings, they're contributing to society, they have very tangible, positive, you know, empowering relationships. So the next category of human being that we have to deal with, Jerome Sage, and again, you probably have it on the islands as well, is the idea of PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. And in America, 7% of all Americans, you know, there have been so many wars and conflict in this country, 7% of the veterans that come back to the U.S. population have post-traumatic syndrome, but 20% of that population are committing suicide. In Israel, you actually has a higher percentage, 10% of the Israeli population, because, you know, there is a standing army there, have post-traumatic stress syndrome. That's 720,000 people walking the streets of Israel, the Holy Land, with some sort of post-traumatic stress syndrome. And I'm going to ask you a question after reading this quote from Professor Rafael Mechoulam, who, again, is the father of marijuana research. It has been suggested that pharmacologic treatments in psychiatry have been over-reliant on the neurotransmitter systems and their agonists. In the last several decades, advances in psychopharmacology have reduced adverse reactions but have failed to lead to major disease improvement. The endocannabinoid system may shed a new light on the physiologic basis of psychiatric diseases, leading to new and more effective treatments, meaning the medical cannabis, as it says, can aid with memory extinction of very painful laments. And I've seen in prior events in one's life, and I heard the testimony of one man who survived the Holocaust, and after his wife passed away, he couldn't take being isolated, living in a nursing home center, and he smokes the marijuana every day, and he says it gets rid of I don't think about those bad memories, and my imaginations open up, and I can deal with living life. So your comments on all this stuff.
Yes, well done. Oh, that's a good story. The beauty of it is that, you know, as you say, when individuals have aberrations in their psychic patterns, right, their psychiatric patterns, right, and their behaviors get to us out of sorts according to what is normative, what our reactions are, to me, suggests more mental illness in the sane than those we consider insane. Because how we treat those who we say are mentally disturbed shows that we are far more mentally disturbed than they ever are. Our reactions to such individuals suggest in us great disharmony in what is said to be normative. So normative to me, and I ain't no psychologist here, is
right.
One of the most controlled states of human behavior. Normative, or Norman, as you love to call that guy, is a controlled freak. He sews his own clothes on himself. You understand me? He measures his pants between
right.
his legs, and then he fits, right? Then he sews. So normative behavior is the most controlling. Now, I'm not saying that if a human is putting feces on their face, that's normal. I'm saying that there's a crying out within such an individual to somewhat
yes.
abase this which we
yes.
call normative, because it has hurt them deeply. Now, when we then take such an individual and then compound the pain in such an individual, are we experimenters in abhorrence? Are we really some experimenters in morbidity to see how decrepit human behavior can manifest? Because I think a lot of the unfortunate humans who were trapped in these sanatoriums became experiments for some psychopaths, for true
yes.
psychopaths. And I feel truly, not just for those individuals, I feel for the psychopaths and the papers they write, and for the fellow generation of psychopaths they inspire in lab coats and trench coats and white lab coats and white MD coats to go out there and inculcate this behavior again. Now, aberrations in human behavior happens for whatever reason. The individual's sense of belonging, of well-being gets broken down by environmental factors. Sometimes the triggers are many. In other forms of medicine, we learn sometimes these mental aberrations are caused because there is an imbalance in the elemental nature. I'll get to that in a bit. It comes together sometimes. When I say elemental, I'll translate it to a more practical language. The elemental comes through in our nutrition. So sometimes there's a lot of individuals who are getting poor nutrition. Now, when I say poor
yes.
nutrition, what do I mean? People say, well, there are people in first world countries who are very well fed, and so how come they're mental here? Are they really well fed? They might be obese, they might be fat, they might be lean, but are they well fed? The elemental nature
right.
of each individual suggests you need certain biochemicals in certain arrangements for you to be healthy. And as you grow, and as you evolve, rather, your essence changes slightly. But these base chemicals within your being need certain regulations, and they come through the nutrients you get from the food, because that is the elemental symbiotic relationship. So sometimes these mental illness are born in food. Hormonal imbalances, because people have put all these imbalanced chemical elements into the progeny of food. They have mixed these weird chemical signatures, calling it fertilizers, calling it enhancers, calling it pesticides, and they're spraying these things on the food, into the food, into the food chain, into the earth, into the water. All these misaligned, misappropriated chemicals are putting humans off in their psychic balance, because we have a connection with the earth, and it's electromagnetic. And when it goes off, what humans call madness or mental disorders is an electrical aberration where the frequencies aren't steady. Like the patterns of a man breathing on the heart machine, you see the patterns are even. When they become aberrated and all over the place, that is mental illness. There's a problem in the electrical, the neurotransmitter, firing appropriately so the electrical energy can transmute itself into harmony in terms of our biological, in terms of our digestion, in terms of our psychological, in the way we think, into our spiritual, into our social, that we can have serotonin in our body, that we can have endorphins alive in our mind, that we can feel to dance, that we can feel to sing, that we can calculate problems and create solutions. So So there's a whole lot of things within our culture that is actually creating these mental disorders, because the people, or rather, let me not be judgmental, they're probably thinking I'm being a little harsh, the state of mind that have created these ways of living are from mental disorders. How could we have created a life and call it normative, call it social behavior, call it social cohesion, when really what it is social division? And we say this normative behavior is how we all should be. So individuals should literally squeeze themselves, stretch themselves, flatten themselves into Norman, into this normative behavior that is confining all of us and causing these aberrant, unbelievable outbursts. And it's not only coming out in those we can point a finger on and say they've lost it. It's coming out in those in the boardrooms, in the briefing room, in the debriefing room, and in the labs. It's coming out in all these geniuses, because 20% of society is said to be functionally mentally ill.
Well, I mean, I know in America the statistics I heard, but is 1 out of 7. That's about 14%. So it's somewhere between 14 and 20%. Jerome Sage, you know, we're coming to the last 9 minutes of our program. However, you know, we're supposed to cover other subjects. Do you have more time to speak past the 11:30 hour Jamaican time?
Yes, definitely. We can go forward.
Okay. Now we have a caller. Because I mentioned the last 10 minutes, someone could call if they want to ask you a question. Calling from the great state of New Jersey. I lived many years in New Jersey. In fact, that's where I had the blessings to meet up with the reggae band Exodus Supreme. Do you mind if if the caller will consent, if maybe the caller, he or she might have a question? Do you mind if I bring this caller into the conversation until we move on to the next subject? They got a little radio shy and they hung up the phone. Okay, so we'll leave it at that. Okay. So that's, unfortunately, we find many people get a little bit verbal shy, but there's no reason to be verbally shy. I mean, you just have all the celestial angels listening to you on this program. The universe is nothing to be nervous about. But that being said, Jerome Sage, tangential but directly connected to this issue, because we know even tobacco, naturally grown tobacco, as it once was before, and this is the stinger. Naturally grown tobacco is a lot healthier, or then it shouldn't be abused, than, say, the tobacco which is just filled up, you know, like you have the GMO food. It's basically adulterated, just like, unfortunately, a lot of foods are adulterated today with all sorts of...
The conjured tobacco is far different from the natural tobacco. Conjured means they have suggestive in it. It's like, I can break it. And someone is saying to us, okay, we're going to create something, but they're saying, okay, this is an apple. Let's not use apple. Let's use mango, because mango is a Jamaican. It's not American. Okay. So they said, okay, we're going to create a special mango, and this mango is going to outsell all mangoes on the market. Why is it going to outsell all mangoes? Because it's going to be different from all mangoes. That means mangoes have a smell, a taste, a texture, a color, right? That's what all mangoes have. But something will be different about this mango, because they conjured it. They created it. They put their thought, they intended it. So, in the psychic patterns, because I'm an artist, so I know things are created, in the psychic patterns of the creation of that, or the making rather, some people say don't use the word creating, in the making of that mango spawn series, brand, is a conjuring, there's an energy in it, a balance, because it is not natural. Once you go and adjust it, once you go and talk about you, you're going to see the genetic structure, you're going to adjust genes here, you're going to put this in, then it's modified is dangerous, it's not natural. So natural tobacco is healthy, and modified marijuana ain't healthy. Natural herbs are healthy, natural marijuana is healthy. Grown naturally, grown to holistic practices is healthy, so I don't trust these non-THC, these so-called normative, you know, herb products that's out there. I won't inhale them, I won't sip them, and I won't use them.
I hear you. Thank you for that insight. And again, before we move on to the next topic, I just want to repeat something that I mentioned the last time we had a program together. That, again, I read this from a rabbi several years ago in a Union of Orthodox Rabbi periodical that if we, meaning the rabbinical establishment, although I'm not, I just want to clarify, I'm not a rabbi, I'm more known as a Torah askan, a Torah activist, if we don't stand up for the rights for the American Indian to use his peyote for his faith-based ceremony, then someone's going to say to us, hey, you Jewish people, you can't use wine for your sacrament. So I say, let the Indian use his peyote or mescaline for their sacrament. It's not my sacrament. If the Rasta man wants to use it for his sacrament, let it be his sacrament. It's not my sacrament, but I respect it. So, you know, then those, you know, we have an alliance that if someone, I mean, there once was prohibition in the country, in America, for liquor and wine and different types of spirits. Primarily the wine is what is of importance to our ceremonies. We actually help to usher in the blessed Shabbos, the Shabbat, as a recalling of the fact that in 6 days the Creator created the creation, and the seventh day he rested. But so again, we're moving on to another subject, but it's connected to this idea of Drum Sage, that the idea that human beings have to learn more about our connection. They should take an earth science class when they were when the kids in grade school or in high school or college. It's a whole life awareness experience to see that the more we're aware of our intimate connection with earth. I'd like to give you one example from the Torah, the Old Testament. Well, I don't. The Torah, the biblical perspective, is that there is an oral Torah tradition that Adam said to the Most High, "It is fitting, I who am called Adam, should be called Adam because I come from Adama, I come from the earth." So, original human being, and again, we're not talking about a nation or a culture or religion, original human being, according to our oral Torah tradition, and this original, we firmly assert, is buried in what is known as Hebron, Israel, with the original woman. His naming of himself, his awareness as a prophet, because you see that God spoke to man and woman, as mentioned in the book of Genesis, he could not separate from the fact that he was hewn out of by the Most High from earth. And when people forget about from where we were hewn from, we see the imbalance, which leads to ultimately, again, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a psychologist, but ultimately the negative outcome, the disconnect, is people in denial of where they come from. Ultimately, the earth leads to spiritual, cognitive, and emotional mental illness, dysfunctionality. Your take on these matters?
I perfectly agree with you on that. I hear the nail on the head, flat out straightway, right into the notice board of awareness, right across the land. Yes, I mean, these patterns that we have created, you know, and how we're suggesting that we should live, you know, have just splintered us more and more. So the human experience is getting more divided, more divided, more divided. And as we get more divided, we lose sense of our connection, the sense of the need for each other, because we then feel that there are those who are not expendable, that are extinguishable, you know, something that are now so clearly distinguishable from us that we actually, through differentiation, suggest they're different. And not only that, through what we have inculcated in ourselves, we have these great lines of divide. The biggest one that we've seen over maybe the last couple of hundred years is what racism has done. But it has splintered more through other forms than just a hate-based racism. It has splintered through a form of those who are on the benefits of the racist society are negating what is necessary to maintain all of life within the society. Case in point, people say, if my needs, meaning the so-called physiological needs, are taken care of, good food, I got someone to have sex with, I got, you know, someone to smile with and think I'm all good and happy, if those needs are taken care of, then my life is okay. So how is it now when we have these highly powerful individuals who realize that their effects upon life can be so tremendous because of the position these societies have placed them in, and they begin now to influence. So when their influence is again off balance, these mental disorders in these individuals have petered out as our behaviors, because they come down to us as the practices we should adopt. And these are suggestions of experts and stalwarts in all the different fields of human honor, right? So, case in point, what's happening now currently all across the plane, all the divides in these little pockets of the earth, all the different groups are splintering, sectarianism right across, then the spilling off of the vast majority of refugees coming from Africa going into, and the Middle East going into Europe, the Rohingyas coming across from Myanmar into Bangladesh, all of this subdivision in human psyche. Because here it is, you've got. I mean, I'm not a nation, I'm not Asiatic, but I can look as everyone else because we're in terra firma, right? So this people say, we do not know the intricacies of this situation, but these, they say the devils are in the details, and these are the language and the normative terminologies we use. Like, we get someone who's an expert to represent for us the true interests of people which they do not know. So my point is, they're in Myanmar right now, right? In Rakhine State, you have the Buddhist majority, by whatever means, and you've got the Muslim minority, Rohingya, and there is this great big persecution. Now, if you press against me, then I'm going to press against you. So, who starts this great big fire? Who cares? It will burn the city. That's what will happen. The fact is, who is in the city? We are all in the city. But when we say, it is you, not me, then tomorrow, in the cycles of evolution, when power change, and it is I that have the power, then it is I, not you. And then you will be disenfranchised. And then we will continue the splintering of human life. So we got to look at the ramification of continuing these so-called traditional behaviors in our cultures, these selfish attitudes, which are mental disorders. Because how can we not see that we are connected? How can we not see that the life in the other human is the life in us? We hide behind these psychological designs. We call them positions. We call them honor. We call them societies. We call them culture. I'm American. I'm Jamaican. I'm wealthy. I'm well-educated. You understand me? I'm powerful. I work with the military. I'm here. I'm in the religious order. I'm in the sacred order. I'm in the secret order. Everyone has these positions, these juxtapositions, these degrees on the spectrum. But all of them ain't the spectrum. We all have to get together, smart, wise mind, simple mind. We all have to get together, Mr. Smartass. Because the fact is, no matter where you are, what degree you hold on the spectrum, Miss Full of Herself, no matter where you are on the spectrum, we all are on the spectrum. And it's proven that your idiocy is causing our hurt. And we're not saying this to be hurtful. We're saying this from a place of being hurt. And we want to heal. So we want the powerful to know that their disorders in mentality is causing millions, even unto billions of people, to suffer from their idiocy. We need recovery. We need wholesomeness. We need cordiality amongst the human family. Let us get together. In true sense, let us rebuild the bridges that were destroyed, because believe it or not, they were destroyed. We learned to be this way, so we can unlearn it and learn a new way. So let's unlearn this junk and learn to be healthy, wholesome, and integral in all of that is an understanding of the self. Get out of programming. be real. Be present. Get out of the programming and be present. Present. Jerome
said, "Father, amen." And I respond with a vigorous amen. What we say in the Hebrew, amen. Jerome, I'd like to share with you, and the blessed listener out there. And I think that, again, this is where, you know, again, with the oral tradition, we can get a nuance out of the verses of the Bible, as we say, to get a new perspective. First, I'm gonna, you know, I want to preface that with saying this: is that, again, this rabbi, neuropsychologist friend of mine, Dr. Eliezer Goldstock, once told me, "Don, every human being born since the sin of the knowledge of the tree of good and evil has a disability. It's called mortality. We were not originally intended to be mortal beings. Some funky stuff took place in the Garden of Eden. I suggest everyone go to the book of Genesis. You can see. And we'll leave it to everyone's free will to decide if it was literally occurred or figuratively. But we have a tradition that there is a simple explanation. It's hinting to something. There is an ethical teaching and there's a interdimensional teaching. So I'd like to quote something directly from after the fall from grace of original man from woman, where the Most High basically imposed, revealed a new guideline for man and woman, meaning all of us as the descendants of original man and woman. Again, not of any nation, creed, or culture, just original man and woman. Chapter 3, verse 19, you shall eat bread by the sweat of your brow until you turn to the ground, for you were taken from it, for you are dust, and as you shall return to dust. Now, I'm going to share with you, blessed souls, a teaching from Rashi, connected with a teaching, and he was a descendant of King David and Solomon, lived about 1,000 years ago, with also the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was my mentor in this generation. After that original sin, at this point, the world descended from its originally lofty, pristine spiritual state. The major purpose of life from this point on became to rectify the effects of Adam and Eve's sin and to restore reality to its original state, which implies to bring us back to our immortal state of being. The first stage of this restoration will occur with the advent of the Messiah, Mashiach. The second stage will occur with the resurrection. At that point, I want to stress this, everyone, I'm going to say it maybe twice, for everyone to listen. At that point, all the souls of those people who lived on earth and died will be restored to their bodies. I want to say it one more time. At that point, all the souls of those people who lived on earth and died will be restored to their bodies. And then we have the famous, you know, Day of Judgment. So that's what we of Israel learn. That's what we teach our children. And this is what we share with the world, Jerome Sage. And I guess before I go to the next teaching, I'd like to get your take on that, how people, perhaps that's why they're not thinking globally, communally, interacting with their friends in a more tangibly positive, empowering way, because they forgot the fact that one day we shall all come back to face the ultimate implications of our thoughts, speech, and actions here on this blessed earth.
Because, Brother Don, thank you, because people have gotten comfortable in the programming. You see, the programming is what's refreshing and what's maintaining the illusion. Now, in all the ancient books, there's this great, grand allegory of man's fall from grace, how it has occurred. Some say through the whispering in his ear of a suggestion that was not from the heart. So the mind considered what the heart suggested not, and then we became vain. We fell from grace. It happens every day in our psychological states when we defer the truth in our heart to contend with the values in the world. We are programmed wholly to discount this internal oneness, this internal matrix. Where there is a space where form takes no importance, then who cares? We're all the same. So if we were to base our existence on this formless idiom, then one would suggest God, the great creator, the great I am, is the most magnificent of perceptions, even the most based of human mind, because it suggests to all of us we are truly one in something that is bigger than us. But any time this idea becomes contrived, brought down to a mere thought, possessed and promoted by those who maintain this illusion, we are at great loss. And we will find it very difficult to see each other as the plants in the forest see each other. They compete not for space. Can you number how many plants occupy a 10 square mile radius in this area versus another? But humans, we do those things, don't we? We attempt to quantify. We attempt to differentiate and suggest, well, his eye color is gray, mine is green. I'm from the part of talent which suggests that I know how to properly elucidate and enunciate my words appropriately for clarity. These things are what the programming suggests. So we are comfortable in the social listings of our attributes. I'm fun on Sundays. I'm good on Wednesdays. I love to have sex. I'm a very talkative person. I'm smart. I worked at the NASA Space Agency. I'm qualified to be your husband. You see, these things are how we've been trained. You see? These are how we've been programmed. And this programming is why it is we can see Jack and Jill are humans. And what happens to Jack happens to Jill. That's why she came tumbling after. You
yep.
see?
Yep.
There's an alignment. No matter how much we say, I'm pissing the water here, and I'll be safe because all that guy down there is going to drink what I pissed in, right? But guess what? Because I'm not ignorant, and somebody is pissing the water from where you are. So you see what's wrong. It's that mindset of pissing in the water, of pissing on someone else. It's a pissing contest. It's got to stop, you see? It's not a real contest. It's crazy, you see? And that's what's happening, because everyone's moving further away because they want to say, I shoot my stream further, and then we go off curve, and we get lost in what's happening. You see what's happening here? That's what's happening here. We're living in Earth on a plane of existence, as you suggest, that it's truly spiritual, but we make it so morbid, so mortal by how we're thinking. We're thinking so abased that we are becoming mortal. And as we become mortal, we lose the immortality. And the immortality is in the formless. It's in the God. It's in the I am. And the I am state is in man, woman, and child is the deference to accept the allowance. We are here all in providence. Let us integrate, share, care. Let us protect. Let us diffuse conflicts. Let us address this experience with pride, honor, and dignity. With a just cause, we will perpetuate love and harmony unto time immemorial.
Amen. And my amen is with from the depths of my heart and with the same vigorous intent that I did previously when Jerome stated his perceptions from the Tree of Life. And by the way, I just want to mention as well to everyone that Jerome Sage Butler has a wonderful tutorial video on the usage of marijuana and about self-esteem, finding oneself. And I just want to remind everyone, and I'll give Jerome at the end of the program, but we still have a couple more segments to talk about briefly, that it's really worthwhile not just to listen to us on the radio, but to see him gesticulate, to see him smile, to see him wipe the sweat off his brow, because it's sometimes quite warm down in the Diamond of the Caribbean, Jamaica. So I just want to throw that in before I bring in this next comment about that verse from chapter 3, verse 19 from the book of Genesis. Blessed souls, again, let's look at this. Let's microanalyze this verse, and we're going to be assisted, empowered by a very holy man who lived in Israel, and he came from Morocco and then spent his last days in the Holy Land of Israel in the 18th century. He was known as the Or HaChaim HaKodesh, basically the light of a holy life. And again, this verse, chapter 3, verse 19, you shall eat bread by the sweat of your brow, understood, until you return to the ground. Now notice the language in English is ground, blessed souls, but then there are two assertions made, but you were taken from it. Actually, three assertions. You were taken from what? The ground. But then the verse concludes, for you are dust, and you will return to dust. So when I was looking at this, reviewing this verse yesterday, I went to a very nice young rabbi in our congregation called the famous Frankel Shul in Pisgah Keser, Crown Heights, Brooklyn, New York. I said, something doesn't make sense. Why? It should have said, for you are from the ground, you should return to the ground. What's the idea of you are dust and returning to the dust? Or it should have said, until you return to the dust. So be consistent. It should be the Torah should have been consistent. It should say ground, for you are ground, and you shall return to the ground, or you shall return to the dust, for you are dust, and you shall return to the dust. So Or HaChaim, blessed souls, gives us a very insightful point, and it goes back to the point that we mentioned before. The fact that we were taken from the ground and we are dust is not sufficient reason to say that we should return to the dust, because originally the intent was that man should not return to dust. We were supposed to live eternally. And if original man, and for all of us, if we take the opportunity, and it's very hard, it's very, very hard, to avoid transgressing the word of the Most High, we actually will take that which is our spiritual, physical dust. Now, when we go into the ground after our literal or proverbial 120 years, we are made of four elements as human beings. The Torah testifies in the interdimensional Torah. We're made of wind, we respirate. Fire, we have a sodium content in our heart, which is combustionable. We have water, of course, we know we're made 60 to 70% of water, and we're made of dust. That relates to the bones of a person. After the body decomposes, basically what's left over are the bones of the person, and that's it, from the oral Torah tradition, that is considered to be the idea of dust. But if we can strengthen ourselves from the spiritual perspective of purifying ourselves, which the purification goes down to the bone, that actually, in fact, we don't have to return to the earth. But if we don't follow the commands of the Creator, until the coming of Messiah, we all have our lackings, whether in doing more positive stuff or avoiding negative things. So therefore, we corporealize, we centralize. I'm not just talking about sexually speaking. On an intellectual, emotional, behavioral level, we become corporealized, and that sullies us to the point we become just that, just very coarsened. And therefore, we actually cause ourselves to become the dust, because we are causing ourselves that to the dust we should return. This is not to scare anyone, but rather that the rotting of the body, because the person caused himself to, unfortunately, not follow the will of the Most High, is something that the majority of human beings have faced. However, from what is known as the Midrash, there are at least nine human beings recorded from about 1,700 years ago who went to heaven without tasting death. And they are Hanoch, which is mentioned in, Enoch, I think you say in English. You have Elijah the prophet, the Messiah, Eliezer, who was a servant of Abraham, Obed, the king of Cush, king of Ethiopia, in our oral Torah tradition, Hiram, the king of Tsur, Yabetz, the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda, who was a great sage from 1,800 years ago, one of the daughters of Asher, daughter of Israel, and Basia, the daughter of Pharaoh, who adopted Moses. So we see, so there's a tutorial involved here in this verse by the very slight changes in the language. Again, this is the Israelite Torah tradition, and we assert this is what we live by. This is what we've been burnt at the stake from the Inquisition from 400 or 500 years ago. You know, the Roman Catholic Church put us to death, all the thing like that. But we will say, and we will continue to assert, if we purify ourselves, we have mentors from the history of not only the Israelite Jewish people, but you see, a king of Cush, a king of Africa, went to heaven alive. We see the daughter of Pharaoh went to heaven alive. Drum Sage, your brother, take on this matter yes.
Brother Don, I would must say most enlightening. I am most loving this moment of offering. Trust me, I'm standing I'm sitting in a kind of a glowing resonant peace. Oh, you struck some magnetic chords, you know, in the string resonance of my soul, I can see some actualizations coming through. Wow. My people perish for lack, because of a lack of knowledge. The foundations of the earth are out of course. It's unstable. Know ye that ye are gods, but he will fall like one of the princes and the sons of men. As you say, Brother Dan, in this revolution of ashes to ashes, dust to dust, we are cyclical on this karmic wheel of proverbial death and soul denigration. But in the true evolution of consciousness, of being, actual factualization of presence, the eternal, the I am, divine Isu, the breath which is the element, the earth, the air, the water, the fire, the fifth, the spirit, the essence, which is life itself. It is awesome. We need to get past the cycles of revolution. Too much revolution. Let us hearken forward onto the evolving consciousness of our living entities. Let us get out of these death-prone cycles of revolution, these
Amen.
Normative dysfunctionalities that's prostrating our spirits, frustrating the great I am, and destroying our presence. Let us grow. That's another word for evolution, people. Let's grow. Let's keep growing. Let go. Transience is as it is. When it's spent, let it go. Goes in one end, out the other. Thoughts, they'll come in. They'll have their value. Let them go. Stop trying to be what your grandfather was, because you can't be. You need to evolve. You need to grow up.
That's right. Beautiful. I just want to, now we have about 9 minutes left, Jerome Sage. So I wanted to go deeper into this prophecy. Again, from Israel, we have a tradition. Isaiah, as we call him, Yeshayahu, is known as the prophet of redemption, because so many of his prophecies are talking about not only the redemption of the nation of Israel, but for all the nations of the world, all the children of the world, all the families of the earth, all the families of the nations, the family of nations. So I'm just going to read the verse, and I'll let you expound upon it, and then hopefully when we reconvene in the near future with the blessings of the Most High, Jah, as you would say, that we can go deeper into this. And I'd also like to talk about the sparking off the concept of meditation, because I know Rasta is a very big promoter of meditation. We of Israel are very big promoters of meditation, because we know this helps us trod through the creation. So this is chapter 41, verse 1, and then I'm going to ask you, Gerald from Sage, to make your final comments, and how people can connect to you via the cyberspace wonderful opportunity. From the book of Isaiah, chapter 41, verse 1, "Be silent to me, you islands, and kingdoms shall renew their strength. They shall approach, then they shall speak together to judgment. Let us draw near." And I just want to mention one thing for Jerome Sage, comments, blessed souls. Notice it didn't say Israel. It said kingdoms. Because kingdoms
yes.
of the human family experience are coming back. Not just the kingdom of Israel. Kingdoms shall return. Jerome Sage.
Blessings. Well, as we gather ourselves, 12 tribes of Israel, the nation of the ancient here in the present, no matter what the kindred, tongue, shape, form, nature of your experience, we are one family. The human family, original man, woman, and child, woman, man, and child, we're still here. Growing through our genetic evolution, our facial, physiological evolution, we're going through a mental and a spiritual evolution. So towards harmony, love, and the continuation of a truly godlike state, let us reach hands across our spiritual, our cultural, our political, our social, our mental divides to create the true patchwork quilt that is truly our harmony. So towards this, towards harmony within terra firma, I truly give thanks for you, Brother Don, for your mental, emotional, and spiritual offerings in functionality, in the practical things you do to aid your fellow humans. I want to give thanks for those in reception of a word. I want to bless up Nafatali. I want to give thanks to Cindy, Kyle, Kijine, Suwade, Sion Marlow, and for all the people who are receiving this word and are psychically resonating in the internals. Blessings and love. Let us continue to resonate this light. Blessings.
Amen. And Jim Sage, tell our blessed listeners, how can they connect to you?
Okay. So those who want to, like, contact me, you can contact me on Facebook at Jerome Sage Butler, that's JeromeSageButler, or you can drop me a line for a consultation, spiritual healing, and just a general, you know, prayers and such at 1-876-842-4643, and that is 1-876-842-4643. I want to say enough love to the people of Barbados, the people of Trinidad, and the people of Antigua. Enough love to the people of Barbados, yes, and blessing shout out, you know, to my favorite artist, you know, who is a stalwart of Barbados. I want to say shout out to Rihanna, you know what I mean? Blessings to those who follow her music and follow her humanitarian efforts, you know, doing something amidst the craziness of this world. So I could not, you know, go without mentioning, you know, her energy and her efforts. So bless up for all our people, wherever we find ourselves, as Caribbean peoples, as dark-skinned people of the ether within the world, and for all shapes, all tones, in all cultures. Give thanks for the bridges we make across our myriad perceptions and sense of self towards harmonization. Blessings, Brother Dan. From the mountaintop, Blue Mountains, up in Kingston, Jamaica, St. Andrew, out to Turtle Island, New York. Life, forward and fire, come with justice and love, peace and temperance.
Amen. Those you just heard for it. We almost went an hour and a half. Wonderful. And it felt like a couple minutes. That's the beauty of human interaction, when it's organic and it's not contrived and it's just people speaking from their heart. We're packed with a little bit of knowledge. And you know, when we talked before from the teachings of Or HaChaim HaKodesh, that Jerome Sage mentioned that he felt that electrical flow. Well, in my terminology, I call it the goose pimple moment bubbling up on the skin. Right now, I'd like to conclude with a unique collaboration that took place almost 8 years ago. It was actually between one of the men. I still love the bands, as though they're a little bit separated. Apple Gabriel was one of the members of the Israel Vibration with Ras Kelly and Ras Weiss, I believe. But here is a unique collaboration. He performed at the Barbie Club in Tel Aviv in December 18, 2009, and he wrote a song about Israel on his flight over. And here's the song. It's the words, I think, are clear, and I think the audio will be clear. So I'm going to just conclude with everyone that we should listen carefully to the words. And I also, as a man blessed shall be blessed, and I convey this upon Apple Gabriel and the whole international African Rastafarian, Taino, Ararak, whatever configurations there are within this beautiful people, that as Apple Gabriel is encouraging Israel, I encourage, as just one member, I'm just one small speck of the nation of Israel, that the blessings that you bless others shall rebound with double deliverance upon you and your loved ones. Here we go. Apple Gabriel meets the Zvulun Dub System live from Tel Aviv, and this is almost 8 years ago. Take care, everyone.
Trust in God to win this.